Welcome to Two Therapists Talking. The hope for this podcast is to talk about important issues related to couples and individuals who are struggling in their lives with many different issues. I'm David Thompson, a marriage and family therapist.
And I'm Sherry Christensen, marriage and family therapist. Please join us as we explore these issues together, and we hope you will learn and be enlightened along the way. Come find us at twotherapisttalking.com. If you like what you're hearing, please get on and rate us and subscribe to the podcast.
Hi, and welcome back to Two Therapists Talking. I'm David.
And I'm Sherry.
And we are continuing today on what we've been talking about. Hopefully you listened to the last episode. We are talking about one of my very favorite handouts, which is the steps to recovery for both partners. We've already reviewed the steps to recovery for the addict or betraying partner, you might say. And we've been doing the last episode on the offended or betrayed partner. And so we have 12 steps on both and made it through the first seven in our last episode. So we want to finish with the next five or eight through 12.
Yeah, and so we won't review those. We'll let you kind of go back and grab those if you haven't listened to those. But we'll start today with number eight, which is to know your values.
Know your values.
So we want to make sure that you understand what those values are, and then past that, beyond that, create systems in your life. Create routines that support your value system.
Right.
And then obviously follow through with those routines and those systems in your life.
Yeah.
So some of that includes things like journaling and affirmations. Those are amazing things to make sure that are in your toolbox, in your dailies that you're doing. Can we talk for just a second about why journaling is important? Because I feel like this comes up all the time, right? Yeah. Like, why do I have to journal?
What's the big deal?
Why can't I just think about it? So I know what I always tell people, but what do you tell people, David?
Well, I like journaling, especially because it's different than the constant stimulation we get through social media and electronics. Because when you write something down, you're forcing your brain to slow down because we write slower than we type. We certainly write slower than we can process or speak.
Yes.
And so a lot of people want to do like a voice memo, and that's cool. There's definitely a place for that. But if you are writing, you actually think a little bit differently.
Yeah.
You process a little bit differently. Yes. It's slower. And I like it for that.
Yeah. I think I like that point too, because I think most of my clients are like, well, I just want to think about it.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, well, yeah, but if you write it down, and I like that point that it slows it down so that you're actually processing it in a different way.
Yeah.
And that is going to bring up different things. I notice that happens for me all the time when I journal, is that when I'm writing it down, I have all these different other concepts and connections and processing comes through. When we do that. So I know journaling, you know, might feel a little tricky or challenging. But sometimes we'll just say, I'll just tell clients, okay, just like set a 5-minute timer. Like you don't have to write any longer than 5 minutes, but just, you know, a little bit so that you're
definitely start small.
You're getting it. You're starting small. You're connecting with things. And that can help you in your processing work. So yes, make sure you're journaling, make sure you have those positive affirmations going. In addition to, again, there's a lot of things we've been talking about through these episodes that that you will want to incorporate into things that can then be part of that dailies and knowing your value system and following through with that. So this is, it's not an easy thing, right? This is something that's definitely going to take you a lot of time, energy, work, you know, you're going to have to think about it. But doing it no matter the cost is critical.
Right. And you think of all the benefits that can come from really hard things. Well, this is one of them. We don't often spend a lot of time thinking about our values because we sort of don't have to. It's like one of those things that happens when you're in trouble, you could say, when you're stressed beyond your limits or something unexpected happens. And so if I were to ask the random person, what are your values? They would probably have to think about that. But people who've been through some heavy things and responded well or went through a recovery process, they could tell me a lot faster
yes.
what their values are. So one of the benefits, which I think is important to remember, there are a lot of benefits to going through some really hard things. So,
yeah. And this is definitely one of them. This is
definitely one of them.
And if you don't know how to do that or what to do, or, you know, you can just kind of sit down and try to figure things out and like, okay, what are the things that I value? What are the things that are most important to me? Right. That's a great prompt. You can journal that out and then figure out, okay, is my life really consistent with that? Like if I say that being healthy is really important to me, but I eat terribly and I don't exercise and whatever, then right. like, what do you need to do to shift that
right.
and change the systems and the routines in your life to incorporate that?
I always say, you know, you have all the values that you want to have. They're just not in the order of importance that you think they are.
Yes, so that is true.
We'll have the value of being healthy or fit, but above that value is comfort and ease, uh-huh. which, you know, if you think about the amount of time you spend on things, it's pretty surprising because you do value health and you do value fitness, but
yes.
you just have some other values up there a little bit higher that tend to win out if given the option. So
for
this
sure.
can be, and we even can do an episode or two on understanding your values better. And so mm-hmm. this is good to think about, but number eight, know your values.
Know your values.
Like Sherry said, number nine, this is an important one. Again, same for yes. the addict. And this is learning. It's like you almost have to switch into, I need help. I need information. I need wisdom that I don't maybe currently have to get mm-hmm. through whatever this is and whatever's coming. And that means taking time or making time for learning and studying that helps you to understand yourself and your partner and their feelings better.
Right.
And this will likely include new skills and talents. And what I would say is eliminate distractions and time wasting activities.
Right.
This is hard.
Ooh, it's hard.
I don't mean no downtime at all. What I'll usually say.
No, downtime is actually really important.
Yeah, we have to rest. We have to disconnect, right?
Important.
We need to, definitely important. What I'll say usually is just make sure you're carving part of that out for these things that are important. And then the downtime almost is a reward for good self-care. So
yes.
let's say you have an hour. That doesn't mean you study for 55 minutes and maybe you get to relax for 5 minutes and just catch the tail end of an episode or something. No, but carve 10, 15 minutes into that downtime for learning, for study, yeah. for growth. And it'll feel really good because the days will pass either way, but these little things will add up and make you feel like you're accomplishing something over time.
For sure. Yeah. And I think even maybe restructuring what your downtime is,
yeah.
like both in content and in
mm-hmm.
In amounts, right?
Yeah.
Like the all of those distractions and time-wasting activities. Like maybe you use downtime a little differently. So
hopefully.
Maybe it's a less of a time waster or distraction, and maybe something that could be a downtime that's a little bit more productive or something like that. I know at least when I'm doing that really well, it really changes everything. And I actually end up feeling like I have more time for a lot mm-hmm. of other things.
And you just feel better about you because
yes.
one of the best, we've talked about this because we have episodes on how to increase your sense of self-worth.
Mm-hmm.
One of the greatest ways to increase our sense of self-worth is a sense of accomplishment. We have things
right.
that we're doing, we're starting, we're finishing. We
and
can
we're
see
contributing
progress
to the world
yep.
In ways, right? Because obviously I think then people get stuck and they're like, well, I thought we weren't supposed to feel like our worth wasn't supposed to come from what we're doing
right.
and accomplishing. And it's like, yeah.
It yes doesn't.
And no.
And.
Yeah. Yes, it doesn't. And when you're
both
contributing
and.
To the world
yep.
and yourself in wonderful ways, then
you feel good.
You feel good.
You do.
Yep.
So, yep.
Which is good, I think, too, when you're in a space of like having a really hard thing, like a spousal betrayal.
Yeah, right? For sure.
You want to find those things. So learn about you, learn about betrayal trauma, learn about addiction, what that looks like. When you understand what they're going through, it gives you more compassion, it gives you more understanding, and it helps you to know where and how I'm supposed to to like set boundaries or show up in the relationship, it really can help shape that in appropriate ways. So you're not, so you're understanding and not setting like funky boundaries in a space where they don't belong and
yeah.
other things like that. So understanding, learning and growing around addiction, around around betrayal trauma, and mental health and mm-hmm. looking at, okay, what other things might be contributing or going on here? How do I communicate better with my partner, relationship type stuff? All that's going to be incredibly helpful, in this process of recovery. So number 10 then is responding instead of reacting.
Love it. I can't remember if we've done episodes on this before. I don't know if we have.
I don't know. I don't think we have, but I'm sure we could talk forever about it.
I love this concept actually.
Mm-hmm.
Respond, don't react. And yes. this is Viktor Frankl's Man's Search for Meaning. He talked about that space between a stimulus, something happens,
right,
and you respond. That space between is your power. If we mm-hmm. just react, there's really no space between. So something happens, we react. And so those two are linked. They're very close together. Somebody cuts you off in traffic and you yell or you flip yeah. them the bird. Well, we're trying to get to a place where something happens and there's ponder, reflect, think about values, think about goals, living intentionally, deliberately. And so there's space in between there.
Yes. Yes. I like that. I like connecting, responding instead of reacting to intentionality and space. I think that's really powerful because I think a lot of times, especially as we're dealing with betrayals, you're dealing with, you know, these bigger things, anything really big, but you know, natural automatic response is to just get really upset
right.
or cry or get hurt.
Yep. So the idea is if we are just reacting, it's probably coming from a place of anger. And you've probably heard us talk about this before. We really want to try to get underneath anger, which is a secondary emotion.
Right.
Kind of an umbrella emotion that covers lots of other emotions.
Mm-hmm.
As much as possible, we want to get underneath to sad and hurt, which is more vulnerable, which our partners or family can hear much easier.
Yes.
And this is sort of the I statement idea. Instead of saying, you know, you did something, what we're saying is I feel this way when this happens or because of something that happened. And it's just right. a much easier message to receive for the other person. It's a yeah. lot more effective.
Yeah. And I think, again, you know, that anger often comes up, right, as a reaction to, like, not feeling protected, safe, or in control, right? And being able to give us that space give yourself that space creates an opportunity to be able to get to the vulnerable place to share what's going on so that you can get your needs met.
Yeah.
Right. Instead of reacting quickly in a protective manner.
Right.
That isn't going to be, like David said, being received well. Right. If you're
it's hard.
Looking at it from like an IFS perspective or whatever, that's a protector. Like a protector's jumping in to like take over, but we want your internal core self to be the one that's leading out that vulnerable, connected part of you.
Yeah.
So definitely we want you to be sharing feelings. We want you to be recognizing your feelings, but take a little bit of time to process, even if that's like 5 or 10 minutes away mm-hmm. from the situation to kind of work through it so that you can show up in that vulnerable, connected way. And that will help you show up in your best light, but also when we show up in self, that invites other people to show up in self.
Right.
And it invites other people to be gentle and work with you and see what you're experiencing and be able to support you. And it's more motivating for someone else to show up and keep doing the work if they're met softly.
Yes, for sure.
So making sure you're taking care of your needs, recognizing that, feeling what you need to feel, going and getting support, you know, but doing it in a healthier way instead of just an automatic reaction.
Yeah. So these last two are challenging, okay? And yeah. So hopefully we're going to share these in an understandable way. Number 11 is a self-evaluation.
Right.
This process invites you to do this anyway, but we're just going to say it. The self-evaluation is taking a deep, honest look at how you were or are, past or present, showing up in the relationship and how you can better meet your partner's needs without owning their behavior. Right. In other words, there's a story behind their hurtful behavior. They're not simply a bad person. Right. And we've talked a little bit about this in another step before, but so the idea is sometimes we contribute to the very issues that we have such a hard time with. And it's hard when they did something that was so big compared to, and painful compared to, you know, our contributions. Like if I am busy with the kids and with the house and with doing things and you felt neglected or forgotten, maybe lower down on the priority list, that's not an excuse to go and seek attention or validation somewhere else.
Right.
So that is not at all what we're saying. What we are saying is there may be patterns like his needs are not being met that we need to think about and consider. And again, not justifying his behavior because he's not living his values. And there's not...
And we're not saying that you're responsible
right.
for his behavior, right?
Right.
And I think that's the tricky part. But if we can't hear that, if we can't hear that there's a difference, right? We're not going to be able to move very far in our lives, right? This is the difference between being a victim and being victimized, right? It's the difference in a lot of these spaces that someone can be acting in a hurtful way and... a really hurtful way. And it doesn't, we still have to look at our part of the whole system.
Which is really hard, which is why we want you to understand this really well. I mean, this is the principle behind good, connected, close relationships don't have infidelity most of the time. Right. And again, this is not your fault if that's the choices that he makes. We just want to look at definitely. We just want to look at whatever unhealthy or less effective habits or patterns were in the relationship. And unfortunately, for guys especially, if our emotional needs aren't being met very well, or our needs in general, we're not really super good often at sharing that. Sometimes we're not aware of what it is at all. And I am certain that a lot of the wives that are coming in here would absolutely have done more to meet their needs had they even been communicated.
Yes.
So this is the challenge for sure. We're just saying, hey, look at how you may have contributed to why this relationship did not feel connected or as connected, and think about how we can move forward showing up better.
Right. And again, if they haven't communicated that, that's fine. We're not like putting responsibility on you for their lack of communication about those things. And we're saying like, we're also not saying... take a peek at how you've contributed to their addiction. Did you hear how David didn't say that? He said, take a look at how you may have contributed to a less connected relationship. Because as we're healing from, and as we're working on healing from betrayal and sexual addiction as a couple, we've got to address those things as well.
Right.
And because addiction will struggle to get better. Betrayal will struggle to get better, and relationship will absolutely struggle to get better if we're not addressing those things as well. We want to come out of this situation with being 2.0 versions, having both of you at 2.0 versions of yourselves, and having a relationship at 2.0 version. So again, none of this is justifying any justifying or pushing responsibility on you for anything that your partner has done. But also, we need to really make sure that you are addressing the places that you can do better to make the relationship better, to heal relationship, to connect more, and all of those things. So
we don't want to come back to that place where we're just not feeling very close.
Right. We want to take it to that next level. And that will always involve patterns and things that both individuals are participating in.
Yep.
So again, hopefully we said that in a way that makes sense.
Yeah.
But we always want to be looking for the ways that we can shift and change and recover and do better, even if the relationship doesn't end up working out, because you want to be in a place where you are pulling apart and finding the parts where you can show up better in relationship in general, and as a person yourself, because that's going to improve every part of your life, even if things don't work out.
Yep.
So the last one is demonstrating empathy. And again, I think what David said is accurate. That can feel hard when someone has hurt you. And now you're like, wait a minute, you want me to be empathetic toward the person that hurt me?
Mm-hmm.
And the answer is yes, because we want you to be your best self. We want you, which includes loving well. It's because we want you to be able to repair relationship, and that's a critical component of relationship. You can't just have one person that's showing up, or neither person that's showing up empathetically.
Right.
And it is challenging. This is definitely a 2.0. This is the 400 level.
This is not the first thing you do when you've learned about infidelity.
Right. So not step one. But if you want to heal from these things, and you want to rise out of those experiences, this is an absolutely critical step. Being able to see and connect around someone else's experience and struggle with things.
So this is the Christian idea of love your enemy, but also you've heard the phrase, love the sinner, hate the sin.
Mm-hmm.
We talk a lot about separating who they are from what they've done and the stories behind what they've done.
Right.
And so what we're doing is we're loving the person you chose to marry, the person that you dated, that it was, you just couldn't be apart from them. You had to spend all your time together if you weren't working or in school or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Who they are is good. Their behavior has really caused a lot of problems. And so much easier to have empathy and show up for them in that way if you think often about that separation of who from what, which, by the way, I think is very natural in parenting. And I think it's helpful to think of your own children
how,
you know, when they're not doing what you want them to do, you may be super frustrated about that thing, but it never is like, I love them less. It never is like, I think they're
a bad person,
or instead of being 100% to me, now they're 90. Now they're 85. Now they're 80. They're sliding. That's not even a question.
Right.
And so that can be helpful as well.
Yeah. I think that's very, very, very important. I think, and again, this is 12 because, you know, forgiveness is going to be a part of that. And, you know, all of those things. But just, again, kind of that thing that I come back to a lot is when you really understand people, they make sense.
Yep.
Right. And so if you really understand, like, what's the process? What are all the things that they went through that led them to act against their value system and show up in this way? It can bring you a lot of empathy. And again, feeling empathy, forgiving, all these things are not separate than boundaries. Like, it's not an either or. You can have both. And that's, I think, sometimes an important thing for people to hear. It's like, okay, we're not saying get rid of your boundaries, just like let people walk on you, whatever. It's not that at all.
Nope.
It's really understanding what's going on for them and showing up for them in that empathetic way, and then also having the healthy boundaries.
Right.
And honestly, in my opinion, I think oftentimes it's having those just healthy core boundaries actually make it much easier to empathize, because you're not worried about reacting versus responding. You know, all these things, it's all okay. Like, you're okay. You're good. Everything's fine for you. And that makes it a lot easier to empathize and connect.
Yep.
So again, this is a challenging concept. Definitely work with your therapist, definitely work with people that are wise and understand that, to help you understand how you can be empathetic and show up in that way with your partner. And again, this is not one-sided either, right? That's a thing that both of you will want to do with each other.
Yep.
And certainly one of the things that you can do and support you can go to is your higher power, or God, praying for them, praying for you to be given the ability to see them as God sees them.
That's a biggie, actually. Yeah. I've given that assignment many, many times.
Have you?
Yes, I have. And I've given it to the addict as well, because I think our greatest challenge in this life will be to believe we are completely lovable. I think that everything kind of stems from we don't believe that anymore. And this idea that, can I see myself the way God sees me, is, I think, vital, which why we love our children so much, because we do see our children the way God does. Just this unconditional love. We're a lot closer
anyway.
Definitely a lot closer, yeah. Not that they don't frustrate us, but
yes,
I think that this is a really important prayer to have in our heart, is to see each other and ourselves for sure the way he does.
Right, right. I think it's definitely a game changer. So if that's something you're struggling with, it's seeing them with empathy, maybe consider adding that.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for joining us. We have just really, we've really loved revising these steps to recovery, adding to them, and fleshing them out more. And we've been excited to share them with you. So thank you for joining us today.
Thank you. Hope it was helpful.
Thank you for listening to Two Therapists Talking. We look forward to sharing more conversations with you. Connect with us at twotherapisttalking.com. or email podcast@twotherapisttalking.com. If you like what you're hearing, please get on and rate us and subscribe to the podcast.